group, and I said, all I want for my birthday is some coffee, which I had.
Got that.
And Zeppelin to bring us back in every break the rest
so
of the way.
So the Spider-Man balloon was not on your wish list.
Oh, the Spider-Man balloon was... You know, it's like when you're a kid and you're, you know, what do you want Santa to bring you? And we would always finish off the, well, I want this, 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 and lots of surprises.
That's what I'm, that's a good, that's good all, answer. Yeah.
So,
great answer.
With whatever Santa, I want all what I want, but I also want some good surprises too. That's okay. So the Spider-Man balloon.
Well, I got a not so surprise for you. How about Russ Tanner?
Our
in
man
studio
Russ Tanner here in the studio. AthensLender.com, Russ Tanner from Prime Lending. Thanks to Skrilla Dog, he was the one that had asked if we could play Black Dog. And now, Logan, I don't know if that was by request or not.
I think I kind of forgot and I panicked last second, so I just picked one.
It's all good.
But send the request in.
For example, are you a big birthday guy?
You know, it's just another trip around the sun.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm a big birthday guy.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm married to my wife because of my birthday.
When is your birthday?
October 27th.
Did we miss it?
Come on, man.
Missed it.
What day of the week was that? I would have been...
Sorry, Russ.
I don't know.
Well, hey, dang. Russ, belated birthday.
Russ, take this Spider-Man balloon with you then. After you
it's all good, man. There ain't much to celebrate about 37.
Well,
yeah.
Still.
I'm in the exact same boat.
Hey,
I'll be.
It was the year was 2000. You know, the year of our Lord 2003 in Athens, Georgia. I'd woken up every birthday of my life with somebody calling me or coming to my room early in the morning telling me, happy birthday, big guy.
Happy birthday, big guy.
It got to be about 6:45. Nobody called or texted.
Oh, in 2003.
Yeah,
okay.
I flipped my phone open. I looked in to make sure it was working. Took the battery out. Put their battery back in. About 7:30. Nobody called.
Dope.
Saw my roommate. Saw my neighbors. Nobody knew it was my birthday. I was down, Dave.
I hear you.
It was a bad spot.
Tough day.
It got to be all the way to 9:05. Nobody told me happy birthday. I walked into speech communications, small group communications, Terrell Hall, and this young Georgia peach from Dublin, Georgia, whose name was Shelly Lee Stuckey, came walking in with a chocolate chip face as big as my stinking head, and I said, girl, you just got married. You don't even know it. So,
that's what's up.
That's great.
What's up.
That is fantastic.
But happy birthday to you, my friend.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's very nice of you. So how did y'all meet in class?
Yeah.
That was the class y'all met in?
So we met.
Because it's funny that she's from Dublin and you're from Wrightsville.
Wrightsville, yeah. So I'll tell the quick story of how we met because it's quick. She does not like it, so sorry, babe. It's coming. Good thing is we're on like a 20-second delay from what she hears, so I'll probably have it out before she texts me.
That's true. So, I'm going to see if your phone light when your phone lights
it
up.
It probably will. We had my freshman year. I had some health promotions class, which was actually her major. And there was 500 people in the class. There's probably like 70, but for a kid from Wrightsville and a freshman, it looked like 500 people. So the first day of class, they want you to go around the room and say, you know, who you were, where you're from, and something about yourself. You know, and I apologize if this remark resembles some of you ladies out there, but most of them are like, oh my gosh, my name is Mary Margaret Catherine. I'm from Alpharetta. I like Range Rovers and purses.
Perfect.
And it's like, I'm sure they weren't really that shallow, but in my mind, that's all I could hear.
Yeah.
Because I'm standing up like, hey, I don't have an accent, by the way, anymore compared to when I first came, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. So I came up and like, hey, my name.
You do sound like you're from Pennsylvania.
My name's Russ. I'm from Wrightsville. I like to fish. And I kind of waved and sat back down, you know, feeling pretty self-conscious about myself because everybody else was like, oh, my gosh, I went to Marist. Sorry, Bartley. My buddy's from Marist. I can make fun of Marist freely because one of my best friends in the world.
Bartley Miller.
There it is. So this goes on for a few minutes. And, you know, all these people with three first names kept saying where they were from and something about themselves. And all of a sudden, I was like, man, who are these huzzies? Then I hear, my name's Shelly. I'm from Dublin. I look at her like, ooh, she's fine, too. So, yeah.
That is a future Mrs. Tanner right there.
Hence it started.
That's where it all
started.
Awesome.
Then she brought me that cookie like 2 years later. I was like, girl.
Girl, you just got married.
You just locked me in your future.
All right, so what was the class again, the one you were talking about?
Where at the introduction?
Yeah.
Health promotions.
All right.
HRPB 1710.
That's where it all started.
That's impressive.
Something like that.
That's where it all started.
That's impressive.
Good stuff for sure. And like I said, y'all were from basically the same part of the state anyway.
Yeah. I mean, look, man, in Wrightsville, if you want anything other than from the Dollar General or the Piggly Wiggly, you had to go to Dublin. So, you know, I spent many Friday nights as a young man in high school cruising the strip. That's the little half-mile stretch between the movie theater and Walmart.
Did Herschel ever come, like, how, like, growing up, how many times did you ever see Herschel?
Very, very few.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very few.
That was still in his prime football.
Yeah, he was still
well, he was playing, yeah. But just at any time of the year, not just the fall, but at any time of the year. Yeah, he never really made it back to Athens that much either.
He would be in town. Everybody knew when he was in town because he would jog. And people, you know, Herschel's out there running.
Is it like Rocky? Oh, everyone yeah. starts running
everybody
behind him.
Everybody knows it's Herschel. So, yeah.
But, you know, you had said something earlier, Logan, about Herschel and eating and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And he won that cook-off.
He won the
thing.
Cooking
yeah,
reality
whatever
show,
that yeah. was. You know, he was ahead of his time because he had – where the Chick-fil-A at Beachwood is now, he had a store. He had a place called – I think it was called Delights. Delights. And it was basically a fast food place, but it was a healthy fast yep. food place.
He still has a big food distribution coming out.
Yeah.
Herschel's doing all right.
Oh, yeah. He's doing fine. Now, even though that Delights didn't make it, it was a little ahead of its time, yeah. but yeah. he was in on it back then. Yeah, that was back in the 90s.
We were still doubling down on that Hardee's Frisco burger.
I'm all about the Frisco burger. You got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it.
So anyway, yeah, when you hear people, hey, what about Chick-fil-A? What about Popeye's? Who's got the better chicken sandwich? It's like, I bet D-Lights had an awesome one back in the day. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, it's kind of interesting about Herschel and seeing him and that kind of thing. But enough of that. Russ Tanner. Dogs in Auburn tomorrow. When we say, well, Logan had asked you before we started the segment, when we say, you know, what's the first thing that pops in your mind is when you think of Auburn, is it Michael Johnson's catch?
I mean, that's definitely a big one on yeah. there, right? Because that was a, oh, man, you talk about a program-changing mm-hmm. moment in a game.
Where you were standing there yeah. on the side. Could you see the catch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember it too, man, because, you know, it was all – that year was meant to be, man. Like Chappie, you know – Kevin Hines, our team chaplain, he had his big kind of theme that year was 316. You know, he was preaching like from different every we do a Friday night chapel, used to, mm-hmm. still do, I think. And like every Friday he'd have like a different book of the Bible, chapter 3, verse 16. So all this stuff was happening. If you go back and look, we got the ball back with 3:16
oh my
left
gosh.
In that game. So we're like, wow. Oh, we got this one. Now it gotta be like 4th and 72 and we were kind of questioning it, but you know, the big man upstairs came through for us. So yeah, man, that was awesome.
You called it a program-changing win, which it certainly was. First time the Dogs will have represented in the SEC championship. But we all have seen the clip. In fact, coming up next segment, I'll start it with the Larry Munson call because there's always a good excuse to work that in. But what was the locker room like after that game? Back in that bowels of the Auburn Stadium, you guys just clinched that thing. Walk us through that.
Can you, before you yeah. answer that question, though, yeah. take us through the locker room at halftime.
There you go.
Then take us through the locker room after that, because I know John man. Stinchcomb had quite the
that was Stinchcomb
had
yeah.
quite
yeah.
the speech at halftime.
I forgot about that. So this is so interesting to me because, like, you guys remember and know more about this stuff than I do. It's crazy. Like, your memory, it all runs together until something jogs.
I had a Jeff Dantzler moment because he gets that a lot where he starts talking to former players and he says stuff to them. They go, dude, I didn't remember that. Yeah, I don't know that. So I kind of had a little moment.
I have no idea what the score was at halftime or what had happened in the game up until that point. But I do remember, like,
we were getting our butts kicked.
Were we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, you know, we weren't a big rah-rah team. You know, I think kind of the attitude of your program and your players always reflects leadership. And Coach Rick wasn't a big in-your-face guy. Side note, people think Coach Rick was really soft and never got into it. Like, he was rough, man. Like, he could get it. But he wasn't a big screamer
right,
and yeller
right.
and all that. It just wasn't who he was. So that wasn't ever a big part of what we did at halftime or pregame or any of that stuff.
What was the score, Logan?
14-3 Auburn.
Yeah, so we were stinking.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not good. And, you know, we go in at halftime, and I do remember Stinch, like, coming up. Stinch was fairly vocal anyway, but, you know, nobody was ever, like I said, in front of him, the rah-rah guy. But, man, yeah, he went off at halftime.
I love it.
I mean, it was bad. You know, people like me, little freshmen, sitting like, sorry. I'll hold the water bottle better in the second half, Mr. Stinchcomb. But just passionate, man. Just, you know, we worked hard to get to this point. We know what we're trying to accomplish. We're a lot better than we've shown. Get your cookies together and play.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. And, you know, that game, and Auburn was so good back then. They just were all the time. Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had players, man. So to be in their stadium, and the Auburn Stadium rocks, by the way. I mean, mm-hmm. people try to say, like, Tennessee's the loudest stadium. Tennessee can get loud. But I'm going to tell you right now, South Carolina when it's rocking, and Auburn, and then LSU is as well. Those stadiums are nuts
mm-hmm.
when the crowds are feeling good. So And that second half, man, it was a battle. It was back and forth, and it was fourth and what? It was fourth and over 10, I think, on that play.
Yeah.
And you know, Greeny just dropped back, cool as could be, and hit Michael Johnson right there, and he went up and got that sucker and got his toes down. And so back to the question about what was it like in the locker room. I don't even think this word is in our vernacular anymore, but back in the day, we would have just told you it was crunk.
I was just going to say, was it crunk? I knew where you were going with
it. It was crunk.
Love it.
So,
we're the same age. We got those vernaculars that only you and I can talk about.
So that was some of the, you know, there's a few games I remember the post-game locker room in. The Tennessee Hobnail Boot game was one. The Auburn game and a few others like that. Like, the home locker rooms are fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, if you win a big game, it's always fun. But, man, when you win a big game on the road, and it really feels like – I mean, it's like, you know, none of us ever got to be an actual gladiator in the Roman Coliseum, but it's always you against them, right? Mm-hmm. It's everybody wanting to see you die. And that's what it feels like somewhat in those opposing stadiums. You know, now, fortunately, we never lost a man in the line of battle. That wasn't something that ever actually happened. But that feeling about it was everybody against you is real. So, man, when you overcome something like that and you smack somebody in the mouth, you go out and you hit them and you hit them again, and then you make the play and they don't, and you win a football game like that from all the blood, sweat, tears that you've poured in, especially if it's the Auburn War Tiger Plainsmen's in their stadium. Man, that feeling in the locker room is something that you cannot replicate in other places in life, and that's what people like myself miss the most about our time there.
We see the videos when Georgia wins a big game. Kirby's in there dancing with the players. You know, we saw PJ Fleck last week dive into the
– Yeah.
What did Coach Rick do?
I've seen him dance.
Have you?
Yeah.
Let me take that a step further. Yeah. I saw David Pollack actually tweet out that he was not pleased with the LSU player that leaked the video of Orgeron.
No, that's crap.
I was going to ask you, I'm not asking for any specific examples, but that's a common thing that happens with a player's coach's only moment. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Alabama put that up on the bulletin board next year just because you always look for it. But, I mean, nobody gets their feelings hurt about that. I mean, it is what it is. And that stuff was very common in the locker room. You know, the stuff you see with Kirby and PJ Fleck, realize that's being filtered through the lens of their sports information people that are putting it out there for promotional purposes and all that. They're cutting out a lot of stuff, by the way, where if you heard them say that, you'd be like, ooh, those are the words that people say to each other.
I'm offended.
Hey, would both of y'all agree with this? I'm not saying this was the case with Orgeron. I'm not saying it was the case with the Cardinals baseball coach after. I think, though, there are some times where those things are leaked on purpose. I'm not saying every single one, and I don't know which ones are and which ones aren't.
I would say,
but I think every now and then there's a little bit of a method to some of that madness.
In today's world, I see where that could make sense.
Yeah.
But again,
that cat like Periscope.
I was going to say, I can tell just on Russ's reaction asking him that was not a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying sometimes I think some of those look a little staged.
Snitker had the same thing when the Braves won the division. Very similar. Video leaked from him.
Yeah. Well, look, when you're preparing for a game, the place you have to take yourself mentally to be ready for big football games, like, you have to train your mind to have a disdain for the people that you're lining up against that is not healthy in normal, you know, in the normal walk of life. Like, you've got to decide that you don't like them at all. If they catch on fire and you've got to relieve yourself, you're not going to put their flames out. I mean, that's the attitude you walk in with. You know, after the game, it's fine. Your boys, a lot of them, and things are cool. But, you know, you prepare so much for that moment. You work. You bleed. You sweat. You prepare. You study. And you watch film. You know them. You know your opponent. And to go in there and to win, the outburst of emotion that you see from these guys is freaking real. So
after the locker room, in 2002, you guys follow that up, 51-7 win over Tech, 30-3 win in the SEC championship, then a 26-13 win over Florida State in the Sugar Bowl. How much can a big win like that at Auburn, using it the same example like we're going to see tomorrow, can the team ride the weeks following that?
A ton. Yeah. I mean, momentum is such a real thing, man. Confidence is huge. I mean, it's crazy. You can't underestimate that. Side note, by the way, if we were in the college football playoff era in 2002, we would be talking about the 2002 National Championship Georgia Bulldogs.
I agree.
That team was really, really good.
Maybe the 2007 team also.
Maybe. You had a couple in there. I mean, 05, I even think we could have, but when we didn't make it in, you know, to the National Championship stuff, we didn't want to play in the Sugar Bowl, so West Virginia just blitzed us.
And the Sugar Bowl being in Atlanta was just weird.
But there would be National Championships at Georgia, you know, ifs and buts, you know, whatever. But yeah, but I mean that game, man, that was a big propeller for us. Just thinking we had kind of arrived on the stage. We'd already won some big games. You know, we were playing well. You know, we were what, 9-1 or something going into that game.
Only loss was to, unfortunately, Florida that year.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry.
So, you know, it happens. But yeah, after that, man, we're like, all right, this is for real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are contenders. We are BCS, playoff, national championship caliber program.
Plus, I mean, it was the first time Georgia had gone to the SEC championship game. So there was that element to it. You know, Georgia had never been there before. And then DeCorey Bryant blocked that punt.
Yeah, man.
And the route was on against Arkansas. And then winning the SEC championship. So that had broken a drought of 19 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sorry, of 20 years. So you got all that going. And then you, you know, people are talking about going back to the Sugar Bowl, which just, you know, there's so many things.
Yeah.
And granted, Florida State, their quarterback was Anquan Boldin.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He was like their third string quarterback.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say was, it was all of a sudden, all right, here we are, and it's Coach Rick versus his former team. There was just so many things going on that season.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
So it was a great year, man. And, you know, that Auburn win was, I mean, that was the turning point for the season for us. I mean, it was the game for us that was going to determine if we had a really good year or we had a great year. Mm-hmm. And it was a great year. I mean, you go 12-1, win the SEC. That's a great year.
Where do you rank Auburn in Georgia's rivalry tree? It's different for everybody, but where do you put them?
Yeah, I mean, they're in the top three or four. Mm,
easy.
You know,
yeah.
We've talked about this on the air before. Georgia fans are weird because it's not like Auburn and Alabama, where that's clearly their rival. Mm-hmm. You know, Michigan, Ohio State, clearly their rival. That's not us. It depends on when you grew up, where you grew up, all that. You ask people from like ask people from like LaGrange or Columbus or Albany.
Yeah.
Hate Auburn.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It ain't Tennessee. It's Auburn.
But so, like, for me, I kind of, like I told you before, like, the team I want to lose to the least is Florida. No, sorry. The team I want to beat the most is Florida. The team I want to lose to the least is Tech. I personally dislike Tennessee. Sorry, Josh, my buddy, the most. But then Auburn, you know, Auburn always to us was kind of they were always the dirtiest ones we played.
We mentioned earlier what the last 15 years, Georgia's 11-4, 11-3, whatever the number is, it's good.
11-3 since 05.
It's very good. But every single season when this time of the year rolls around and you see Auburn on that schedule, Russ, I'm not sleeping well tonight.
I'm not. Look, I had a buddy give me an analogy about the Gus bus this past weekend, by the way, Gus Malzahn. Because Auburn can literally beat anybody in the country, but they could literally lose to anybody in the country. And my buddy was like, you know, Auburn's kind of like a PGA golfer that's ranked like 40-something in the world. He's very good, and he may get to the British Open, and he may shoot an 84 one day. He may come back the next day and shoot a 58 and set the course record. So that's just kind of
the way. And miss the cut.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of the way they roll. So, you know, this Auburn team, I think people, to an extent, are honestly sleeping on them a little bit, man. They're 7-2, and their losses are to Florida and LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not bad.
Not at all. And a win over Oregon.
And that's with a young quarterback who his last six games has made a lot of mistakes. But, man, their defensive line is sick. They are, I mean.
There's three first-rounders on that defensive line, I think.
Adams and Bryant.
Yeah.
Who's the other one?
Derrick Brown. Derrick Brown.
Derrick Brown. Yeah.
Probably
a
top 10
pick. That's what I was missing. Like,
that dude is real.
They're scary.
Yes.
Like, they're really, really good. So, you know, it's going to be – I mean, Bo Nix for them, they're going to try to take it away – try to take what decides the game out of Bo Nix's hands, you know, meaning they're hopefully not going to put him in bad situations for them. But what Georgia, Lanning, Kirby, and staff has got to do, and they know this, they've got to make Bo Nix make plays. You know, you can't let Auburn line up and just run the ball with all their little gimmicky run game and put you on your heels and leave guys wide open. So, you know, if we can make it to where Bo Nix has to sit in the pocket, make plays, and beat us, things work out well. If their running game gets going and Bo Nix has wide open receivers, is able to get the play action pass going, it's close to their defensive line, is able to keep them in the game, then, you know, it's a coin flip. So, you know, the Dogs are a better football team. We are more talented all the way around, but Auburn is really, really good.
They are. I'm telling you. And I feel like I said this earlier. You look at their scores, it's like they play up and down to their competition. And, you know, a lot of teams do that. But that's why I don't want to get too fooled because they didn't beat Ole Miss by 50 points, or they didn't beat Tulane by 50 points, because then I'll look and say, well, they hung, you know, with LSU on the road.
They had a chance to beat LSU.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that Florida game was weird, but that could have gone either way as well. It was just a strange game in itself. So that's kind of what I think tomorrow's going to be like.
I've had some conversations with many different Georgia fans the last week about Georgia-Auburn. One thing that comes up a lot is the defensive line we just talked about with Auburn. They are as real as it gets. And how do you see Georgia being able to run the ball tomorrow, specifically between the tackles? Because in my untrained eye that has never played a down, I feel like running between the tackles is almost not an option tomorrow. How do you combat that line and get Georgia's run game going?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways you look at doing that, which one, you hope that the consistent pounding of what you do ends up wearing those big guys out. You know, so Georgia will run the ball up the middle, and we will run up the middle a lot. And fans are going to get upset and say, why are we running the ball up the middle? There's like a lot of green space out there. You've got to pound those guys to make them stop you up the middle, to open up some of the other stuff you do. And hopefully you gash one or two in there. Auburn's going to make some big plays. They're going to have some tackles for losses. They're going to make it tough to run on some. But if you can get those guys having to respect your inside run, then give Swift a chance to get to the corner. You throw a screen and make them chase you. You know, you make them not be able to tee off on Fromm and give him a little bit more time in the pocket. You know, those things affect the defensive line. So long drives, you may even see some of the tempo stuff. You know, that's kind of overused. We think, oh, just run tempo, wear them out. Like, but Georgia may do that some. I would expect them to try a couple of different kind of ways to attack on there. But, you know, I mean, look, man. X's and O's way get overshadowed by the Jimmies and the Joes, meaning sure. Auburn's defensive line is good.
Yes.
You know what? But here's the deal. The Georgia offensive line knows they're really good, and if they got any dog in them, they're going to rise up and you know, accept the challenge. So, you know, you ain't playing UAB with a 5'11", 300-pound guy that sneaks up on you and gets past you, get a holding call on you.
Flashback. Man, did that happen to anybody?
Flashback Friday.
That's funny.
You know going in what you're up against. And they prepare. They get ready. They develop that disdain in their mouth so that when they go out there and see Derrick Brown, like, you want to punch him in the face. Hopefully we don't do Myles Garrett and hit anybody.
Just don't take his helmet off and hit him with it.
A reminder, too, that Georgia's fans, we thought Derrick Brown was a dog up until, like, signing day.
Yeah.
Up until the last second. They cheated. Maybe there'll be a little bit of a little extra factor in there.
Yeah. That's it.
But we could flip that over the other side and say we got George Pickens, who was committed to Auburn for 18 months before he flipped. So
what's the over-under on George Pickens getting a personal foul in the game
bar? Pretty good. Well, we talked to Kirby about that this week. Specifically, he was asked, and players were asked, how do you, you know, limit the emotions of George Pickens? And they all said the same thing, that they're not worried about it.
Nah.
And he is a young man, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little extra chippiness, but I'm not worried about him going out and
hurting the dogs. Yeah, I think they'll either keep him on the sideline for the first series or line him up and say, hey, dog, go get it. Like, what's the play, coach? Ball's coming to you, man.
So. AthensLender.com, that's where you can find Russ Tanner on the interwebs. Russ Tanner, Prime Lending, and he's a man who snapped the ball to David Green and DJ Shockley.
Who else can say that?
SEC championships in 2002 and 2005. And he's also a man who's had his number retired along with Herschel Walker at Johnson County High School in Wrightsville, GA.
And met his wife in Calm, whatever that was, over at...
Uh-oh. What was it?
We met in health promotion. Started dating in speech communications.
So the cookie came in speech communications?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There you go. She didn't know it at the time. Well, maybe she did. She's pretty savvy.
You know, she was pursuing me.
Like, yeah. Right.
She don't have the mic right now, so we can go ahead and let this out of the bag. You know. She had her eye on me.
There we go.
That's right.
She had her eye on me.
How could she not, right?
That's right.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. More with our man Russ Tanner here in the studio. It's 8:30.
Moore's at us. Three wide outs. Man, we've had some shots, haven't we? Snap to David Green. There he goes in the corner again, and we jump up. Touchdown! Oh, God, a touchdown in the corner. With 85 seconds, somebody went up high. Was it Watson or Gibson? Michael Johnson up high. We're trying to put glasses on it. And they stagger down into the screen and the fence in Johnson. The corner. Michael Johnson turned around and got up in the air. We caught the ball. It's 23-21 with 85 seconds. He turned around and jumped.
That's good stuff right there, Logan.
Doesn't get much better. You and I went over our test. What do you think about when you think certain things? And for me, Georgia-Auburn is 2002, Greeny to Johnson. It's the morning show, 960 The Ref, presented by St. Mary's Medical Group, Logan and Dave.
Hearing Munson, though, just that made me think of, like, he had some – Greene had some good options on that play. He had was it Watson? Was it Gibson?
Wide open, baby.
Yeah, I know. And there's, like, Michael Johnson and some good players.
Got Russ Tanner in studio, as we do on Fridays of football season, sharing his knowledge and telling the best stories on the radio waves this morning. And good to have you in here, Russ, as always. And, man – Auburn, Georgia, tomorrow on the plains. We've already talked about keys to winning and how Georgia needs to combat this and that, but how you feeling overall about just this team and the where they stand? Last week, 27-0, pretty good showing by the Dogs. We haven't even talked about that.
And people were griping about it.
That's 2019, Russ.
Are you kidding me?
That's the world of the internet, which I'm learning more and more just put it down from time to time.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah, well, you know, no reason to gripe about
it. We're going to circle back real quick. Okay. 27-0 against a decent Missouri team. Mm-hmm. They're not trash. Quarterback situation hurt them, but their defense is really good. And people try to, you know, get on Fromm, talk about all the play calling, this, that, and the other again. You're two drop passes away from beating them like 41-0.
Sure.
If you beat a team like 41-0, you know, it's just a different conversation. So people, you know, whatever, man. Like,
in this day and age, when you're trying to impress people and you got the voters and you got the committee, a 27-0 win is the same points-wise as a 47-20 win.
Yeah.
But what looks better?
I like the goose egg, man.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
Because in the era we're in, where defense is becoming less and less of a thing to celebrate it, to throw goose eggs up on people, like, go through other people's schedules and find me how many in the top 10, how many – Logan researches for us.
Here we go.
I ain't your boss.
Where's Dave McMahon?
How many teams in the top 10 have even had shutouts this year? You know?
Yeah.
And if so, like, let's throw out like the FCS type teams. You know, say if they played Northwestern, Louisiana, Lafayette State, yeah, throw that out. But it's just
Ohio State only shut out Indiana.
Yep.
And Cincinnati, too. They're also a ranked team.
Ohio State is really good, by the way. I think they're very good.
They should win tomorrow.
So, you know, it's funny. They look at, you know, Georgia fans want it to be sexy all the time. We want to run up-tempo. We want to score a lot of points. We want to do this, that, and the other. Well, guess what? The offense playing like you do helps the defense do what they do. Yeah, you know, it's a system thing. And Kirby is not going to go out and try to beat somebody 100-0 just to look good. Like, he believes, and he's right in this situation. If you win your games in the SEC, you will make it to where you want to be at the end of the year. Plain and simple. You don't have to beat somebody. Clemson has to beat people 60-0 because their conference sucks. Mm-hmm. Stinks. Sorry.
It's okay. Sucks.
Sucks is all right.
My mama would not be happy. So, you know, that's just not how we operate. When we get a win and the system we have that minimizes mistakes – that gets you a lead and makes it really hard for another team to come back because you are literally choking the football life out of them with a smothering defense and a consistent offense that moves the chains. It makes it hard for a team to come back and beat you when you get up. So, you know, I think the interesting thing is going to be if we do get into a game to where we've got to be a gunslinging shootout type thing, and people think, oh, we can't do this. What happened in the Rose Bowl 2 or 3 years ago? Same type situation. You had a freshman named Jake Fromm. You got the most high-powered offense that we had ever seen up until this point, and Baker Mayfield running it. Lincoln Riley has the shiniest new bicycle on the block, and nobody can stop it. And it was hard to stop their offense, but what happened? Georgia scored like 117 points against them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel good about where the team's at. I like people questioning them, coming out, you know, mm-hmm. challenging them a little bit about we're not that good because it puts a chip on your shoulder. And, you know, I think this Georgia team has an opportunity to have that chip on their shoulder and come out, you know. Where are they at mentally Saturday is going to tell you. You'll know. So, you know, this is a litmus test.
So,
will Kirby and you know, we were talking about golfers a minute ago. And, you know, the good ones, they don't see the water. They don't see the sand. All they see is the green and the, you know, the grass. If Georgia, you know, if you want to take the mindset that, hey, in 2016, Georgia got blown out at Ole Miss. 2017, the Auburn game was terrible. Last year, it was the LSU trip. Here we go with that SEC West road trip again. Would a coach say, hey, we haven't performed very well in these SEC West road games, or do you not bring that up and just accentuate the positive?
Yeah, now every week, man, is different.
Yeah.
You know, and you just prepare for it. You just prepare to go in. It is a boring thing we hear, like, trust the process. But it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you just do the same thing and prepare every week, and then you go out there and hope that your guys are ready to rock and roll when it comes. You know, people think, oh, Kirby's too conservative. James Coley doesn't want to do this. This, that, and the other. Like, they would love to score 50 points a game. But you know what? They're going to do it within the framework of their overall plan that they've got in place. Right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm glad that, you know, those guys make the decision. Don't listen to all us fans, because if it was up to us, we'd go five wide and just throw bombs every play, because that works in Madden.
There you go.
This ain't Madden, man.
No, it's not. By the way, Russ, if anybody stops you today, I want to prepare you. If anybody says, hey, Russ, Mr. Tanner, what does LSU, Clemson, Alabama, and Oregon all have in common? Neither have shut a team out this season. Not a single one combined. Georgia's got three of those.
Yeah.
Ohio State, the two we mentioned, but those other teams, they're not throwing shutouts like Georgia is. It's a good stat.
And when you say every game's different, that's for sure, because Vandy scored 38 against LSU.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Every game's different.
Well, you know, we sit here like –
then again, LSU scored 66.
All right, I'm going to ask y'all a question.
Yeah.
Let's put this Missouri game in perspective real quick, okay? Yeah. Then we can talk about whatever y'all want to talk about. So during the Missouri game, I've got an answer in my mind. Mm-hmm. I think there was a moment in the game when all of us Georgia fans got the most nervous. What in that game made you the most nervous?
We've already talked about it.
What
them scoring
it?
At the end and trying to get a rushing touchdown.
A rushing touchdown.
Exactly.
Like, we are most nervous in a game about they may score a rushing touchdown.
While and we're up 27-0.
Did you ever feel threatened by Missouri in that game?
No.
Did you ever
until
feel like,
the end.
Did you ever feel like they had a chance to come back and actually beat Georgia?
Yeah.
No. We're worried about, with 3 minutes left, are they going to run the ball into the end zone and get a rushing touchdown because we haven't given one up?
And they called a timeout, and Georgia ran some starters back
out
there.
You dang right
too.
We did. You know what? Because there's a little vinegar in there.
You
know,
I loved
you won't.
That
you
was,
got pride about what you're doing.
Sure. That was great.
Yeah,
I love that after the game, I got to talk to Monty Rice, and I asked him specifically, were you aware during that stand of the streak? And yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah, they knew it. I love that he was candid enough to tell me, like, yeah, we knew it. And we went out there and stopped it. I thought it was a great attitude to have.
Anybody that's played football on any competitive level, even like high school or, you know, I don't know, maybe it happens in middle school stuff. Like, you've been in a game to where you were beating a team, you know, you're up 38-0 in the fourth quarter. You know, you done put the little boys in, the young guys, the scout team, let them get some playing time. And all of a sudden, the other team starts driving the ball. Well, what do all the starters on the sideline do? Hey, coach, I got my pads back on. Hey, call timeout, man.
Yep.
Don't let them score. Like, guys take pride in that kind of stuff. So
I loved it. But you're absolutely right. That was kind of a nail-biting time, if there ever was one, in that game. Hey, by the way, we said we were going to ask you this. You saw the end of that game last night with Myles Garrett hitting Mason Rudolph with his
helmet. I saw the replay of it.
Yeah. So we wanted to ask you, no names, specifics, but what was the maybe kind of the worst thing you ever saw in practice?
Ooh.
I see his mind churning.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well,
there's a lot going
well,
through.
Well, there's no names.
Well, there's several, because we used to fight.
That's what I'm saying.
A lot.
Now, you didn't rip somebody's helmet off and hit them.
I've seen it happen.
Have you? Yeah, see, that's what we were wondering.
Yeah, I've seen it happen. Big Dan.
He
see, I didn't say his name earlier, but I was thinking.
I don't know
that
he connected, but I think he actually threw the helmet at the guy. but no, we used to have a lot of fights, man. Mm. You know, and this isn't anything. This is public knowledge, pretty much. And these guys talk about because they both matured a lot. But you know, Pollock and Stinchcomb used to fight every day
because
they're both alpha dogs.
You've talked about that.
Yeah, I mean,
before.
They're both alpha dogs that didn't like the other one on the field.
Just to make sure, which Stinchcomb are we talking about?
John.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, Big Dan used to fight, like, every day. I mean, it's just kind of the way he rolled with it. We all fought. So then, you know, Coach Rick made a rule sometime, like, I don't know, our junior year or so, like, started off like, all right, here's the rule. If you're if you're part of the start of the fight, you can still fight. But you can't jump in the fight. Like, we literally had a team meeting one day about rules for fighting. You couldn't jump in the fight because the linebackers were nasty. Like, they were just mean people.
Yeah.
You know, if you start fighting –
yeah.
you know,
if Odell Thurman.
Odell would come get you. But if you started fighting somebody else and Odell came and got you, it was a bad day for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the tight ends and linebackers fought all the time. So then Coach Rick said, all right, here's the deal. If you're not part of the start of the fight, you can't jump in. Like, all right, cool. Well, Coach Callaway told us, I don't care what he says. If one of y'all gets in a fight, the rest of y'all better get in there too, and y'all better fight. Because if you don't, whatever punishment he's going to give you, I'm on triplet.
So you guys aren't dummies. Little You'd man. Rather have Coach Rick's punishment than Coach Callaway's.
I remember clearly that, and the video guys used to film our fights.
So, yeah, I'll ask what a lot of people want to ask you. How was Greg Blue out there in the fighting stance?
I don't know.
No,
I never. DBs don't really come fight with the linemen. Okay, like they're smarter. Than
I didn't
that.
Know if
like,
he was because the heavy hitter he was. He's been popping up on my social media.
Yeah,
lately.
Greg Blue's man. Awesome. Greg Blue's Woo. Awesome, but he also weighed 205 pounds. Okay. Okay.
But could hit like you weighed 450.
Yeah, out there in the middle of the field with little right. wide receivers coming at him. But he wasn't coming down there with us to fight, okay. man. Like, you get handled down with offensive linemen, defensive linemen fighting. It's a different deal. But I saw a fight one day, man. Like, I'm sure it was Pollock or somebody. He was always starting to fight. They hit one of our running backs. And when they tackled him, they grabbed him by the face mask and was dragging him on the field. It wasn't bad. Sounds worse than it really was. But when that happened, like, one of the offensive players went and hit Pollock or Odell, whoever it was fighting at the time, hit him in the back. And all offensive linemen, like, we didn't want to fight, man. We're fat and tired. Like, fighting takes a lot of energy out of you.
I'm getting hungry, man. Yeah.
So, you see on film, we're all walking off the field, and you hear, like, the, you know, you could tell, like, people are starting to get buzzed, and there's a fight going. And all the offensive linemen, in unison, we all turned around, saw what's happening. You saw our heads drop. Then you see the hands come up, buckle the chin strap back up. And here goes the fat boy trot back into the middle of it. Just go try to pick somebody out and hit them. So, you know,
I love it.
Yeah, I hit Ray Gant, got him, and then when I hit Ray Gant, Big Pooh Canville hit me in the back.
Mm.
Then Pooh was sitting on top of him and punched me in the face. Pooh weighs 330 pounds. He's straddling me, holding me down, punching me in the face. But I had a helmet on, and he was hitting me. I was like, Pooh, what you doing? He's like, what? I was like, man, why are you punching me in the face? My bad, dog.
I don't know.
We're just fighting.
Then you're all brothers shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so they end up banning fighting. And I think Kirby and them now, like, they don't let them fight like they used to. I've been to practice a couple of times. I've never seen a real – no, there's always a skirmish. Sure. Somebody's always getting punched in the face or pushed or something like that. But
you want it to be a little chippy, though. Yeah. You want it to be testy.
But it's not Royal Rumble
right,
anymore.
Right, right, right. You don't
– We had a guy, like, break his shoulder blade or something one time, and that kind of – that ruined that.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
It's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt.
Yep.
Ken Veal walked into one of the Tuesday media sessions wearing a shirt that said Silly Rabbit, tricks are for kids. It was his tricks t-shirt.
He either had on that or a wife beater at all times.
classic. All right. Russ Tanner here in the studio with us. Prime Lending, AthensLender.com. We'll come back and put a bow on just funny stuff. It is 8:49. Oh, yeah. You need to wish every day could be a birthday.
Well, you get it once a year.
Another trip around the sun. Thanks for all the nice wishes. I do appreciate that.
You know, I think down in Gatorland, all the Florida players feel like it's their birthday every game day because Dan Mullen's wife kisses them.
Oh! Zing! It's a strange case.
Let's see.
We've had a request from a friend in a high place to discuss that, so we can't call them out, but that's that's weird, man.
Let's rattle off all the coaches' wives that we know of that make out with their players. I'm kidding. That kiss their players as they're walking off the field.
Mrs. Mullen.
And?
There's that one. No.
Okay, that's all I can think of.
Yeah, that's all I got.
That's I dare you to find something weirder about a coach's wife than her kissing the players. Like, it's on the cheek, like, dog. They some side lip on that. Like, that's weird.
No, that's – and here's the thing. Like, what if – like, I always look at it this way. Like, what if one of the women's basketball coaches, you know, that if she's a female and she's got a male husband and the girls are walking off the court after a game and he's kissing them on the lips? Or and then it's like, whoa. But it's weird.
It's weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this got awkward.
Yes, it did. But it's not the first time, and it won't be the last.
No, it won't.
All right, Russ, we got about 3 minutes. I know we've already talked about, like, the keys to the game and all that stuff because you were talking about, yeah. Hey, this is what Georgia wants to do. Would Georgia rather win 47-20 or 27-0? Well, either one would be fine, but 27-0 would be more of Georgia's style.
You know, I'm sitting here, you know, we always have the game notes from the SIDs, sports information directors, for those of you who don't
speak. Sports communications now.
The vernacular.
Yeah.
And I messed it up. There we go. So, you know, sitting here looking at it, and the stat at the bottom of me, it says, Georgia and Auburn are 2 of 6 FBS teams that have not surrendered more than 24 points in a game this season, along with Clemson, Iowa, Ohio State, and San Diego State.
How about that?
So, you know, you got two teams that have played really good defense all year long, even in their losses. The most that's been given up is 24 points. So, you know, I remember back in my day, the defense would always tell us, I'm like, if you give us 21, we'll win. Mm-hmm. And if you go back and look at, like, the Coach Rick era, when we scored 21 points or more, the record was crazy good. And it's probably very much like that under this regime, too. So we're gonna be steady. We're gonna play really good defense. We're gonna try to run the ball. We're gonna try to get some easy throws to spread the defense out some, and then hopefully take a few shots. But I mean, you know what, man? Mindset, attitude, momentum, you know, all that stuff is more important tomorrow, because at this point in the season, everybody knows what to do. Everybody's practiced until they're tired of freaking practicing. You know it. You understand it. You just got to go out and doggone execute. So hopefully that's gonna be it. You know, and sitting here looking at it, man, like. Realize, too, how spoiled we are. This is the chance for us to win our third SEC East title in Kirby's 4 years at the helm. I mean, the program's in a different spot right now.
Yeah.
You know, to even have that as part of the conversation. But, you know, tomorrow's huge, man. Like, we'll probably win the SEC East regardless of what happens tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But for big picture stuff, with a chance to go home and bring home the big crystal ball, tomorrow's a must win.
Absolutely.
It is indeed. Well, Russ, let's see. You'll be out next Friday, so you won't be along with us. And then for Tech Week, we'll figure out what's going to happen on Tech Week.
We got some stuff in the works if it all comes through that'll be good for the people.
And then hopefully there will be SEC Championship Week as well.
Yep.
So hopefully we got a lot of stuff going on for the Dogs down the stretch here in November and into December. But always great to see you, my man. Good stories. And the fighting stuff is funny. It just stuns me that Pollock is in the middle of all these. I just find that so surprising.
Pollock and Big Dan, man.
Now, do they like each other?
Oh, yeah. They're boys. They love each other.
Okay, all right. They're good now.
Yeah.
They were good then, I guess, unless they had
the off the field, on. They were good.
I hear you. All right, we've got our fourth and final hour. We got picks to make. Bud Light 3 for All. It's 8:57.